Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 112. Hey everybody, I'm Gabe Jones.
I'm Josiah.
This is a show by the fans.
For the fans.
And we got a great show for you today. It's a little bit different, but we've got Chris White. He's a director, he's a writer, and he is on the forefront of releasing a film called Electric Jesus. And it's a fun film. It's about a band that grew up in the 80s, kind of like a garage band, you know, when back in the day when people got together and played music for fun.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Anyway. I was never good at playing music, so I...
Yeah. But still, like, you would go and listen, at least.
Yeah.
Anyway, in this fun corona era that we are in right now, the thought of actually going and listening to music is kind of weird right now. But still, we've got Chris on the show today. Electric Jesus has been going out to film festivals all around the world, and it is in the process of becoming released nationwide in early 2021. But today, we will bring you a preview of that movie.
Ooh.
Exclusively here on this podcast.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
A little different than, you know, what we kind of normally do.
Yes. So, but what the tie-in is, Electric Jesus is about Christian music.
Okay.
Specifically, like, hair metal. Like hair bands, not completely, but a lot of it is about hair, like Christian hair metal, like from the '80s, like Stryper,
you know? And the Rez Band, and
yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot we grew up
listening to, because that's what our dad grew up listening to.
Yeah, so that's exactly why I was interested in this, because this was something that we kind of grew up in, and you know, I just thought it would be fun to reach out to him. And yeah, so he's on the show today. Before we head into that, let's talk about our Patreon page. Patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can join our team and help support our show. Literally, you guys have kept us on the air. For those of you that are, if this is the first show that you've listened to us, I told a story recently about our computer that we edit shows on. Just like, it had enough. It died. And so we had to buy a computer, and we used the money that the Patreon supporters have given us over time and bought a new computer. And
or we wouldn't even have an episode today.
Right. So or an interview, because I used the computer to record the interview. So it's we have an amazing gratitude. You know, we are coming up on a season of Thanksgiving in November, and so I would be remiss not to express my gratitude to our supporters. And you can be a supporter too for as low as $1 a month. Patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. We've got a bonus episode we just recently recorded. Celebrating the 20th anniversary of Loud and Clear by the OC Supertones.
Yes.
And you don't want to miss that. We've got some more content that we're going to put out there, but I'm not really sure what it is yet. But you just need to go on Patreon to become a supporter to find out for yourself.
We have some stuff in the barrel. It's there.
We do. Speaking of stuff in the barrel, our year-end podcast is coming up pretty soon.
Yes. I'm excited.
It's one of our favorites to make all year. As a matter of fact, this morning I was preparing our Facebook page for that and just loading it up with some great albums that will be posted throughout the holiday season. And so if you see an album that you haven't listened to, post it on our Facebook page. Go check it out before you check out our year-end episode, and then maybe you can create your own best of 2020.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's one of our favorite episodes of the year.
I think that episode, more than anything, always kind of enlightens me to what I've missed throughout the year. And then I end up listening to what happened in 2019 and 2020. And so I mean, you always miss stuff. So it's always good to see like, oh, I didn't realize that this band released something and I didn't realize this happened. So it's always a nice little refresher.
Yeah, and I had a little bit of that myself, a little bit of that experience myself today as I was getting ready for that. But that's coming up soon. Be looking for that. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. So Electric Jesus. So basically what I can tell you is Electric Jesus is a film about a band that grew up in the 80s, idolized bands like Stryper, decided to become their own band, fell into that sleazeball management, if you will.
Hmm.
And I don't want to give away what happened. So, but the movie celebrates some great Christian metal, some Christian bands.
There's some recognizable people in this movie.
Yes. Brian Baumgartner. Easy for me to say.
What? Are you okay?
I'm sorry. I watched the Steeler game a little earlier, and I'm a little...
Frazzled,
yes.
The Steelers won, though. But yeah, Brian Baumgartner of Office fame.
Yes.
You might know him by his famous chili recipe. But
yes.
Kevin from The Office is in this movie. So
yeah, and he does a really great job. There's a lot of unknown actors in this film as well, but they also do a really good job of portraying people making music. For me, one of the things that I liked listening or watching this, there were some like cool Easter eggs that like only people that really grew up listening to or watching knew about. Like there was a scene where this guy was kind of like at a festival watching a band side stage, and he was standing by somebody that was like towering over him, and only the people that actually grew up in that era would know that the suit that the guy was wearing, you can't see his face, you can just kind of see him from the torso down.
Mm-hmm.
It's Steve Taylor.
Yeah, and
he's wearing that suit,
like he's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah. So and there's a fun story about that in the interview. Speaking of the interview, we're just going to go right into it.
Let's hit it.
Without further ado, here is our interview with director, writer of Electric Jesus, Chris White.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
He said that he had your number. You cut the telephone line. You say you need it, I'll resign. He said there ain't much time. You need to get your mind. He said you kept trying to avoid it. And you kept knocking on the door. In a flash, it was over. You were a prisoner of war.
I got to watch the movie over the weekend, and it was so much fun to watch. I didn't know what to expect, honestly, because, you know, there's kind of a bad stigmatism when it comes to Christian film. You know, there's a lot of cheesiness out there, I guess. So I was delighted to watch, and I thought it was incredible. I kind of wanted to know from you, like, what's your background in music, and like, why, like, obviously this is a passion project for you. What's your background that led you to kind of making this?
well, I mean, so I was, I don't know how far back to go. Let's talk about filmmaking and stuff. Let's see. I guess it's been about 10 years ago. It's been about 10 years. I made a choice that I wanted to pursue filmmaking full time, like as a job. Like I wanted to do it and make a living. And I felt qualified to do this because of just years of, I studied theater in college and, you know, had worked in advertising agencies and directed commercials and stuff. I produced a sports documentary. There are just different things that, and honestly what it was the when the DSLR cameras came out or high definition video came out, and it was like, man, this stuff looks so good. And I mean, you can actually make something that looks like a movie now. And I've always wanted to make movies, and I guess if I don't do it now, I'm probably never going to do it. So my wife and I began this pursuit of making films, and we started making like short films, and then we made a couple of features, and we didn't really have much of a budget, but every once in a while, we do a crowdfunding campaign and raise money to make one. And then we made one where we had investors. It was still very low budget, but we got people that actually put money in as investors and learned about that. And about that time, I was also taking a screenwriting grad school course, and I had an assignment to write something. And, when you take a writing class, they're always telling you to write what you know. Yeah, write what you know. And so I knew the evangelical Christian subculture I grew up under in when I was a teenager in Columbia, South Carolina. Like, I think I know that I'd never seen a movie that showed that world in the way that I remembered it. And I guess the crux of that is just that usually when Christians are in movies, I guess depending on who's making the movie, Christian characters are either sinister, stupid, or superheroes. If Christians are making the movies, Christians tend to be pretty awesome, and then if people who aren't Christians make the movies, the Christians seem like they're bad or just dumb. And that wasn't the way I remembered it. It's not how me and my friends were. I mean, we were probably dumb, I guess. We were young, like everybody. But I just remember us being kind of awkward and strange and a little quirky, and definitely loved Jesus. And, we had, Christian rock music that we liked and listened to, and we had, we fell in love and had our hearts broken, and everything that everybody has, we just had it in the context of Jesus and of church, and that being a real central part of our growing up. So I'd never really seen that, and so that's where I started writing, and that's how I came to Electric Jesus. I was just, and I'll tell you this, Gabe, this is kind of, and you're saying, like, it's a mixed bag when it comes to so-called Christian films. And I don't think of Electric Jesus as a Christian film. And we can talk about why that would be. But I do know this. When I started writing the movie, I was writing it to people maybe I grew up with. I was writing it to people like guys I knew growing up and friends, and saying like, hey, what do you think about that? What do you think of what happened? Do you still believe that stuff? Do you, or have you walked away from it? Is it something that's no longer a part of, I'm writing to these nebulous people, right? And then I started writing to me. And that's when it got good. Like, when I stopped trying to write it like something to, some vague story that I was saying, some conversation I was having with people I grew up with, and started asking myself those questions. Well, then I think it turned into something far more interesting to watch, and it became something that has a little bit more, maybe it has some more power to it than it would have had otherwise.
I was struck by just kind of how there's that tension in the film where the people in the band who call themselves Christians are kind of, they're kind of fearful of being out in the world. And there's actually a scene where they're actually approached with an idea of going to play a bar where they serve alcohol, and they were really fearful of that. And that's something that kind of struck me as something that I grew up in. How important was that for you to kind of portray that, and not only portray that, but also kind of make that part of the conversation of, this is kind of what bands in the 80s and 90s kind of grew up with in Christian music. A lot of them were presented with that idea in conflict. How important was that for you to put that in the movie?
So I think, I think good films have characters that are challenged and experience conflicts. And a lot of times, you know, in films, like, you probably find yourself watching movies and TV shows where you know you like the character and you're pulling for the character, but you're still not sure what the right thing to do is, you know, and neither is the character. You know, a decision has to be made. A decision is made. There are consequences to the decision. And even after the consequences, you're kind of saying to yourself, well, was that the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do? Or what would I have changed if it had been me? Well, I mean, that's life. that's us living. You know, we make a lot of decisions in our lives, and some decisions we regret and some decisions we're super proud of. And in general, we kind of, you know, as just people, we reflect on our life and we're, I don't know if that was I think that was right.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't. And, you know, maybe it doesn't quite matter trying to figure that out. Maybe that's the wrong thing to be asking and the wrong thing to be thinking about. So it was important when the band, you know, I like rock and roll movies a lot. And my favorite rock and roll movies are about bands that don't make it. And so from the get-go, I mean, from the first frame, because we give you in the beginning, something's going horribly wrong with this Christian band playing in a really evil place, and they're being hated pretty mercilessly. We know it's not going to end well, but I have to get them there. And so the thing I thought that would be, since we've built up the whole movie, that this band really, really, really loves Stryper and wants to be able to open for Stryper, wants to be able to play with Stryper, wants to be able to, you know, be on that level, we have to dangle out the opportunity for them to do that. And so the opportunity comes in the form of a Christian music industry person saying, hey, you go play this show, you'll get to open for Stryper. You know, so it's a glorious promise, but it also comes with, yeah, but they want to see you play in a real rock club. And so you got to face that. So, and then, you know, consequences ensue for good or bad. But yeah, I like that it's kind of delicious at the end in terms of, is this the right thing to do? Is the wrong thing to do? And honestly, like I when I watched the movie, you know, even as the writer, the director of the movie, I like watching that sequence, and I pull for them every time. Like, I'm like, yeah. When Eric gives that speech in the hotel room, and he just says, you know, I'm tired of playing at these churches and camps. You know, I want to play where people really want to hear our music and need to hear our music, and that to me is exciting. Like, I love Andy Eccles, the actor that plays the role, and I love him in that scene, and I'm all for him, even though I know, because I wrote it, that it's not going to turn out so well when they get there. But I'm ready to stand up and cheer at that point.
How important was it for you? Like, a lot of times, you know, you mentioned that you like to watch films about bands that don't make it, and a lot of times that happens because of the background and management and bad management at that. Mm-hmm. And it might not even be bad people. They just don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And Brian Barngarner did such a great job in that role. How important was that for you to kind of portray the bad side and the dark side of even this is true in the Christian music world?
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that Brian and I talked about from the get-go was just that this character Skip he's playing, Skip has to really believe, like, he is a believer. He does believe in Jesus. He does believe in the mission of Christian rock music, the evangelistic mission. He wants to share the gospel. He just is a messed up, broken guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's, you know, we would say he has demons, you know, yeah. Maybe the way our grandparents might say that. And he's wrestling with these demons. And a lot of the demons are, you know, when he comes on screen, the first time we meet Skip, the first thing you notice, if you know Brian Baumgartner from The Office, of course, he plays Kevin Malone on The Office, then you know he's wearing fake hair. You know, he's got a toupee on. And it's not like the worst toupee you've ever seen. It's just, it's clearly not his hair, which is a lie, right? He's presented fly. And so, you know, that was something with Brian. You know, when I talked to him, I was like, hey, would you think this would be cool if you wear a hairpiece in the movie? And we talked about it, and he was like, yeah, that actually is pretty great. That's a great, like, outward symbol of what's going on inside this guy. And then we know when he goes to, when they meet Sarah, when they go to Pastor Wimber's church and they stay over at their house, and Pastor Wimber's talking about him getting messed up with some bad dudes, you know, and he owes Pastor Wimber money. There's just some vague talk about some nefarious goings on. We kind of realize that this guy, this Skip guy, is probably makes some bad choices, you know, and then, you know, it's kind of revealed that he drinks and he's maybe sneaking off with some moms from various youth groups. Like, we don't ever see what's going on, but there's always that kind of dreadful feeling when he's around that maybe he's not the guy that he wants us to think he is. And even, well, I don't want to talk about the very end, so I was going to make but that's the only spoiler. I think that's off the table. We can take it up to Purgatorio, and then we don't talk about it. But there's even some stuff at the very end where we get some more information about Skip. And, you know, he's just one of these guys, you know. He's one of us. He's one of all of us. We're never going to be able to live up to everything we might want to live up to and be. And Skip's just, you know, he's one of us.
I was really drawn to a lot of the subtle references throughout the movie. It just kind of made any kind of Christian music fan that grew up with it smile. Like, you just throw in, like, Steve Taylor standing there in his jacket or you know.
That's really Steve Taylor's confetti suit. Yeah. It is really his. And let me tell you that, since you're geeking out over that, because I geeked out over it, you know, I asked Steve Taylor if he had the confetti suit, and he said he did. And there is one. There's one of them. I thought maybe there were a bunch of them from the tour, but there's one that he has. And he sent it down for us to use. And he said, but I'm telling you, you're going to have to find somebody with a 28-inch waist and, like, who's like 6'2" or something.
Yeah.
And that was almost impossible to find somebody to even stand in the suit, because Steve Taylor is a physical freak of nature, for sure.
He is. How important, though, was it to have those references, like the 77s, Daniel Amos? You had a lot of them in the movie.
Well, some people, you know, I think it just makes the world feel true, because, like, even if you don't know those bands, when Eric tells you all the bands he likes, they say, what kind of music do you listen to? And he literally lists 66 bands. One for every book of the Bible. He lists 66 bands, and they're all really bands. I mean, they're all actual Christian bands that he would have listened to. I don't think it matters. You know, like, we've all walked in on pop culture conversations where people are talking about some show we're not watching, or music, or something, and you just kind of roll with it, you know, a little bit. And I think that's the effect in the movie. Like, you don't have to know that when he says, who knows, you might be opening for Steve Camp or Mylon, or, you know, like, I know who Mylon is and Steve Camp is, and probably, you know, maybe 15% of the audience does. So it kind of doesn't matter. But what it does for me, and what I think it does for the actors, is I could give those kids, I could give them, you know, we gave them a Spotify list, and they listened to the music, you know, and these are real people. This is really what you're listening to. And now, you know, you're probably also sneaking in some Van Halen and some Def Leppard and maybe AC/DC, but this is, you know, this is your musical influence. So I just thought it made I think getting tiny, tiny details like that right, even if, you know, most of the audience doesn't understand the pains that you went to get it right, it just makes it more real for the artists, the actors creating the movie. So I like that a lot. And it makes me really happy when I hear from people who know people in those bands that come across the movie. Somebody who's friends with the people in Servant wrote on our social media, oh, I know those people. I grew up with those We went to church with the servant people, you know, like, and that just makes me happy that they get a little shout out in the film. Mm.
I really enjoyed that part. How important was it for you, aside kind of from the movie, to have the soundtrack be as high quality as it is, and have a guy like Daniel Smith on that?
Okay, so Daniel and I met through a mutual friend several years ago, and even the first time we met, we just kind of hit it off. I just love Daniel Smith, and I just think he's just such an incredible artist, but he's just really one of the best human people I've ever met. And in our first conversation, I said, I've got this movie about a Christian hair metal band, and I'm thinking maybe you should do the music. And he kind of laughed and said, I didn't really listen to like that much Christian music at all, and certainly not Christian hair metal. But he said, but in middle school, I was obsessed with Def Leppard and ACD, Rats, you know. And so when we started working on the songs, we started at those songs. And we also started with this idea. I had written the words to the 316 songs and the Evil Band songs. I wrote the words in the screenplay and then gave them to Daniel to create music for. And I said, you know, we can change the words. I don't even know what song I was hearing in my head. I was just writing to a meter, you know, verses and choruses. And he said, let's try to make them work. So we wrote songs around lyrics that were already written, which is really hard to do. I guess it just depends, you know, it depends on how your band writes songs, but he liked writing to the words. And also we had this idea that the songs would be better than they possibly could have been. So when you hear Commando for Christ, it is such a great, I mean, the songcraft behind that piece of music is so advanced, exceptional. Mature artists wrote the song. That's the reason why you sing it. In your, you know, I get stuck in your head like it does. And the production value, the musicians playing on it are incredible musicians. So the music is beyond, way beyond what those guys could have ever played. But our justification of that was just saying, thinking back, when you remember, you know, a concert you saw when you were 18 or maybe a record you liked and you dig it up, you know, you find it and you listen to it again. And it's, you know, we've all had that experience of realizing it wasn't quite as good as we remembered. Like in my memory, that was the best show I've ever been to. But now that I'm really thinking about it and I have more advanced taste musically and, you know, it wasn't really as good as maybe I thought it was. And so we just decided that what you're hearing in the movie is the music that Eric remembers as he's telling the story. And it was epic. You know, it's like the costumes that the band wears when they're at the Purgatorio at the end. They look like, you know, striper show clothes, you know. And you know, I always say, like, I don't know if 316 was wearing that cool of show clothes. I don't know. But in Eric's memory, and Eric's telling us the story, he's telling us what happened. They are that, you know, that, you know, 316's most glorious moment, you know, they kind of morphed with Stryper in a weird way, at least in his memory. So, because, you know, there's no way Skip could have gotten him, you know, cool clothes. In fact, we did a screening of the movie for Stryper, and I was super curious what Michael Sweet would think of the clothes. So I just asked him, I was like, hey, what do you think of those costumes? And he goes, man, dude, he was like, those look so cool. Like they were better than anything we had. Who made those? You know, I was like, no, they're not better than Stryper. But it's like, you know, those only had to be worn twice, you know, like your had to be worn on the road for like a year, you know? But yeah, I think, you know, when it goes to music, the music has to be great. One, so the audience will want to watch the movie. I mean, it's practically a musical how much music I play in the movie. So you have to like the songs or you'll just stop watching the movie. So they just have to be good songs. The fact that the lyrics are sincere but probably theologically problematic is just, you know, that's just a joke for the viewer.
Sure. So with this year kind of wrapping this up, this has been a weird year for films and everything because of COVID.
Sure.
So do you have a plan in place of when this might be released? Has that been delayed because of everything? What's your plan?
Well, you know, the fact that production has shut down in a lot of places is, and the fact that we got the film finished before all this happened. I mean, we were in sound design, I think, when the pandemic happened. But we were, you know, we didn't have to be on a set with 100 people anymore. So that's been really good for our film, and we got it done. And we've used the fall to play in film festivals, and we played in about a dozen U.S. film festivals, you know, all over the country. Most of the festivals are virtual streaming. A lot of them have what's called geo-locks on, like, who can see, you know, that if you can see it or not, depending on where you're you know, kind of checking it out. But tomorrow we actually, I guess you won't, this needs to be a little evergreen as far as dates, so you can edit that out. But, you know, in the latter part of October, when we're recording this, it's late October and we're about to head into November, but, you know, we're going to be at the Virginia Film Festival, the SCAD Savannah Film Festival, Orlando Film Festival, Fayetteville, Arkansas Film, Rome, Georgia Film, Carrboro, North Carolina. I mean, and we've already been at the Portland Film Festival, the Nashville Film Festival, Iowa Independent. Like, we've played at festivals all over the country, and we're getting great response from people who see the movie. So it's still possible this year to see the movie if you can connect with one of these festivals. If not, look for the film to be out in the world and wide release early next year. I should add that we also, the soundtrack, Daniel and I actually just locked the masters for the double LP soundtrack record that's coming out with the film. There's actually a Kickstarter campaign right now that provides incredible rewards for people and it'll run through middle of November. I think November 19th is when it wraps up. But you can get, like, full vinyl record CDs, lots of cool different things like T-shirts and buttons and all this cool stuff. And I'm telling you, this record, it's incredible. It's 21 tracks of music. It's music from and inspired by Electric Jesus. There's a new song by Fleming and John. There's a new song by Steve Taylor and the Danielson Foil. There's four new Danielson songs. Then there's all the 316 songs, Bloody Mass, Satan's Clutch, Sarah Wimber, everything you hear in the movie, and some of the score, all thrown in. It's one of the most, it's just so fun to listen to. It's so entertaining. I've been listening to this music for 2 years now, and I was listening to it before this, we started talking, because I love it so much. So it's just a great, great record of Christian rock music. And then a couple of Satan rock songs.
You gotta have some bonus tracks.
That's right. So, but, you know, read the lyrics. There's one song on the soundtrack that's by a fictitious band called Joy Explosion. And Daniel and I tried to write the worst worship song ever. We're just like, their music has to be so boring, and these guys have to hate it so much. And it's a song called We Just, and that's all they say, the whole song, We Just. And it's just terrible. And then, of course, we wrote Satan's Clutch song called All Hail Hell, and Bloody Mass is song. You know, Bloody Mass is that band that plays with the makeup on it. And the lyrics are just they're like Alice Cooper. They're just like, you know, like crazy, demonically evil lyrics. And me and Daniel always joke about, like, I wonder what's going to get us in trouble with God more. You know, the satanic songs we wrote or the mock worship song. And he's like, oh, the mock worship song, definitely. Jesus thinks those other songs are hilarious. I don't know about Just. We're on thin ice with that one.
We'll be right back.
That was our interview with Chris White. I'd like to thank him for joining us in the midst of a very busy festival season. It looks a little bit different. A lot of it's virtual right now, but it's still busy nonetheless. Would like to give a kind of reiterate what Chris talked about in the interview. There's a Kickstarter for the soundtrack of Electric Jesus that is ongoing right now, and you can go and check that out on Kickstarter right now. Help them out. Get some cool stuff. I mean, this is a one-of-a-kind thing here. And Daniel Smith is involved from the Danielson family, and more recently, I guess, Steve Taylor and the Danielson family. And I believe that there is probably a track or two from them on the soundtrack. So you'll want to check that out. And there's a lot of cool stuff that those guys, Daniel Smith and Chris White wrote together, like lyrics and music. And it's pretty cool. I mean, it's catchy. I've found myself singing some of the songs that are in the movie, and it's cool. I mean, that's kind of the stuff that I grew up with. And yeah, be looking for that on the horizon in 2021, Electric Jesus. I promise you it is such a fun movie to watch, especially if you grew up with it. There's so many fun little nuggets in there, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's always the little things in a movie like this that kind of make you excited, where you're like you mentioned earlier, Steve Taylor, where you're like, oh, I know who that is. And
yeah,
I mean, it's exciting. And I mean, it may even introduce some people that don't know to look some of this stuff up and figure out where Christian music came from.
Yes. And so, yeah, be looking for that on the horizon in 2021. We are going to head off into the sunset. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. For as low as $1 a month, you can support us. We would love to have you. We're on Instagram, DC Talk Podcast, Facebook, and the Facebook group discussion page. And you're definitely going to want to be in that group in the next month when we start making these year-end posts.
Yeah, I learned a lot last year from your posts about, hey, this movie will be talked about, or not yes. movie, but this album will be talked about on our year-end podcast. And I thought, well, shoot, now I have to listen to that.
I have already scheduled 45 posts.
45 albums?
Yes. So that's a lot.
Interesting.
There is a lot. You can check us out on Twitter, DC Talk Act 2, and our website, decentchristiantalk.com. Of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, YouTube. We went through some kind of milestone on YouTube recently.
Hmm.
They emailed me about it, they being YouTube, and I don't remember what it is, but it was a phenomenal number. And I don't remember what it is. What a bummer.
Maybe we're in trouble?
Maybe. I guess that's always possible. Anyway, I think it's that we went over 10,000 subscribers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. So thank you for subscribing. I think that's it for the week.
You know, we should get a Twitch channel.
I'll put you in charge of that.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I guess don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses.
Peace, guys.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.